Trexploration.
Hello and welcome back to Trexploration. I'm Albie.
And I'm Chris.
And today we are talking Star Trek Con. Con! 5 and 6.
And we're live and streaming, live at 5 and 6, I guess.
Live at 5 and 6. Yeah.
Yes. So
yeah, we were getting a little behind with Con, so we figured, you know what? Let's get y'all caught up before the new one comes out, which is what, 7? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
We already have people in the chat. Roll for Turaco.
Hey,
dude. Hey,
roll for Turaco. Roll for Chuck.
What are we discussing tonight? We just covered that. Drawing a sketch card for Albie today. Chris is next. Cool.
Uh-oh, sketch cards.
Quote the Raven, nevermore.
Oh, see, everybody heard me reading The Raven. If you're just joining us before when we were ramping up to go live, Albie told me to regale the people with something pithy and relevant, and I just started quoting The Raven. Doth quote The Raven.
Nevermore.
Nevermore.
Wolf Draco also says, Albie looks fabulous and Chris looks snappy. That's what I was going for. Fabulous, thank you. I just re-glittered. Is your Delta on your
OnlyFans? We reach.
Yes.
We reach, Herbert.
Yep.
I still can't see the chat, though.
Really? You got to go.
Oh, there it is. I got it. Okay. Roll for Taraco's on a tear here.
And then I'll let you read from now on.
All right.
So we're talking about Con 5 and 6, the audio drama. We were going to do just 5, but then we'd be like, oh, we're still behind. And then we kind of listened ahead to 6, and Nick really goes with 5, right, Chris?
Two more contiguous episodes of Con you will not find. This is really one story across 2 episodes. So it was a perfect way for us to pull the trigger and say, let's do a double show. Like you said, it'll help us catch up. And we can discuss, you know, how we might cover the podcast in the future, depending on how this one goes. So I think that we have options, though, which is nice.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Chris, but there's a podcast out there called That Star Trek Podcast. And I think they all collectively agreed not to do it anymore until the end.
They certainly did.
I guess we'll come back and wrap it up when it's over, but for now.
Yeah. Well, these are all of my dear friends and Albie's dear friends, although he's never met them.
Sean
Ray and Scott Madison.
The great Sean
and
Ray.
And Nick Yeager and Rick Tatro and the beautiful Rick. John Irons.
And
the enchanting Virginia Pickle. And
George and, Glass, Virginia Pickle. Come on.
Virginia's a real person, and she's a doll, and a strong woman. She's a modern woman, tough as nails. Just so I don't sound misogynistic saying that she was a doll. And also Tom Madison, Scott's brother, and everybody else over there who occasionally pops on. But I think I named them all. I probably forgot someone, but I'm a bad friend. Anyway, that Star Trek podcast, the core crew has been Rick, Scott, and Neek covering Con, and they got as far as episode 4, and they were just like punching out. They're trying to figure out if they're even interested in covering it episode by episode, or if they're going to just do a wrap up when the thing is over. And they were going to let the episodes really make the decision for them. If one of them or two of them felt compelled to discuss an episode because of what happened, then they would get on and do their show. If they did not feel compelled, they would just save everything to the end. I'm going to let you guess so far what the verdict has been over on that Star Trek podcast.
And yet, after they said that, they went in to have a great discussion about Star Trek Con. So who knows?
Well, that's the funny thing is they wrote it off. And then when they let the shackles of having to discuss Star Trek Con, they just loosed the shackles and then they just started talking generally, and then a couple of questions came up that actually turned out to be interesting. So it was a weird podcast, and I don't know how they're going to proceed, but I'll agree with them whatever they decide. So you should listen to that Star Trek podcast.
A couple things. I think you have 2 friend groups at least, all of those people, and then the other one is me. You probably have your doctor friends and then your Dr. Laura doctor friends and Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine. You probably got a lot of friends. Thank you for giving me time, though. I appreciate that.
You're my one and only, man. You're the guy I pod with.
You
get me.
You're my podcasting partner. That's what I call you. So let's talk about Con in that regard, too, because, you know, I'm finding like if this, if, you know, I'm enjoying it on the fourth listen, let's say, right? But I shouldn't have to get to the fourth listen to actually get sucked in. I fear like if this was a book, at this part of the story, I probably would have closed it and put it on the shelf and said, yeah, it was okay. But I wouldn't finish it. But since it's an audio drama and we're covering it, I'm going to finish it because it's almost like episodes.
Yeah.
But the completist in me says, not really. So if I wanted to abandon it, I could. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm feeling first we should tell people what we're doing. We said it's parts five and six for everybody who might be wondering.
Imagination's Limits.
And the Good of All. So those were written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack, based on a story by Nicholas Meyer, directed by Fred Greenhalgh, with Naveen Andrews as Khan, Ren Schmidt as Marla, Sonia Cassidy as Rosalind Lear, Maury Sterling as Ivan, and special guest appearances by George Takei as Captain Sulu and Tim Russ as Ensign Tuvok. So just we got that out of the way for posterity when this isn't live and people are saying, what the hell are they talking about? Now they
know.
That's
true. Now,
to your point.
Yes.
I know we usually wait for me to read the synopsis before we do initial impressions.
Right.
But as excited as I am to be listening to an audio drama based on Star Trek, based on Khan, produced for the ear, which is just a thrill for me on so many different
ticks
levels.
Ticks all your boxes.
Right. Ticks all my boxes. So as you can see, I'm building up to the... But honestly, they're losing me. They're losing me. And there's a couple of reasons for that, but we can get into that. And I don't want to, as you know, I always try to approach anything that we discuss, anything that we review on its own terms and try to find at least positive conversation.
Oh, yeah. I found some positive things.
Yeah.
The fourth time.
Just to put everything in a context that's not just crapping all over things.
Yeah. Not going to crap on it. So we're going to finish it, I think.
Mm-hmm. How we finish it remains to be seen, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, do you want me to go to the episode synopsis?
Yes, Chris. Would you now, is this going to be one combined into two, or is this going to be two separates? How should I introduce
it? Well, it's two combined into one.
Because the story is so contiguous.
The story is so contiguous that I had written the synopsis for episode 5, but I just slapped on the main stuff from episode 6 after I listened to it earlier this evening as I was walking Penelope.
All right, Chris, could you read for us, anyone who hasn't listened to the audio dramas in a little bit, the synopsises for Star Trek Khan audio drama, episodes 5 and 6, Imagination's Limits and the Good of All?
Alrighty, so Imagination's Limits opens up on the Excelsior, and Dr. Lear, Rosalind Lear, is making a personal log where she is frankly fawning all over Khan and how great he is. She gets interrupted in her own self-accolades, and she must report to Captain Sulu, to whom she is a total jerk. As usual,
yeah, right.
Sulu questions her about her motives and whether she believes Khan was a victim of Starfleet negligence, but gives her the SETI system scans that she requested. Remember those from the last episode? They were classified. Tuvok said he'd see what he can do, and apparently he swayed Sulu to give her those scans. And those scans show a minor fluctuation in SETI Alpha 6's core at the time that the Enterprise scanned the system, but nothing imminent. And it was Spock himself that ran those scans. So, Spock? Spock is above reproach, but she still sees it as an impossible coincidence. So, commence this discussion about the long-standing prejudice against augments in the Federation. And Sulu is like, they're the worst mistake humanity has ever made. Khan was a merciless monster. Monsters are made, Lear counters, not born. She'd like to understand the recipe. Sulu chalks it up to unprocessed pain and says, it is not Khan's fault that Khan, It is not Kirk's fault. I'm sorry. I haven't read this over in about a week and a half. Sulu chalks it up to unprocessed pain and says it's not Kirk's fault that Khan made bad choices. We interrupt this ponderous tete-a-tete to go back to our archival recordings. Khan and Marla's newlywed dalliances are interrupted by the explosion of SETI Alpha 6, followed shortly by a crashing spaceship. Wow, what? I thought it was going to be a meteor. It turns out to be a spaceship. Khan decides to attack the aliens while they are wounded and vulnerable. Marla is like, what? Why not make friends? They might be able to help, especially now that chunks of SETI Alpha 6 will soon rain down and lay waste to SETI Alpha 5.
The sky is literally falling.
Yes. Khan counters that the one purpose they have left is survival. And these aliens apparently pose a threat. To Khan, anyway. Speaking of whom, there are almost 200 humanoid survivors. They make no sounds. Everyone but Marla is gung-ho on killing them. Paolo says waging war won't matter. The planet will kill us regardless. Earthquakes, floods, cats and dogs living together. Paolo urges Khan to forget about the aliens and seek out some underground shelter with water. He says the aliens will probably have scans of the planet's geography. Khan is like, great, we'll force them to give it to us. Marla warns that the aliens may look weakened, but they may have freaky mind powers and kill us with a thought. But Khan shuts down all talk of doing anything practical. Marla tells Khan that she is saddened by the limits of his imagination. So Khan's dumb army advances on the aliens, but surprise, Marla is right. The aliens stand in a circle and mind bleep their attackers. They don't really hurt the attackers, but they make their weapons melt and bend and warp. And Khan orders retreat, and everyone is screaming and scattering in pandemonium. And as they do, an alien voice intrudes on Khan's thoughts. The alien is named Delmonda of Elboria. He says that they will not harm one another, but Khan commands Delmonda to leave the planet. This planet is mine. Why should I trust you? So Delmonda actually tells Khan exactly what he needs to know, where to find an underground water source. And sure enough, it's there, an underground freshwater sea 100 miles wide. We end with Khan recording a personal log saying he still distrusts and fears Delmonda's motives. And we're all wondering why. The guy just did you a solid. But at the beginning of part six, Marla realizes that Khan is so freaked out because he cannot comprehend an act of simple, selfless kindness. But he continues his discussions with Delmonda and they get to know each other better. Still, Khan got a con, and he orders Ivan to keep tracking the Elborians to see if they're up to no good. Sure enough, Ivan stumbles on a lone Elborian and murders him in cold blood because Ivan got a Ivan. Meanwhile, Khan's people are exploring the network of underground caverns that will soon be their new homes. The underground sea is vast and fresh, but seems devoid of any food. Khan and Marla have found some hot springs and are arguing baby names. In another area of the caves, Ursula is complaining, as usual, the chamber set aside for her in Medbay is too small. But Godot discovers that there is another cavern just on the other side of the rock face. Enthusiastically start digging. Cue the tunnel collapse. Khan hears the crash and rushes to help, leaving Marla alone. While trying to find her way back, Marla is instead mentally summoned by Delmonda. He leads her to the caves where the Elborians have created a camp. They have Ivan in a trance and tell Marla about the murder. She commiserates, unable to talk Ivan down. After helping free an injured Mado from the rock pile, Khan rushes and finds Marla aghast that his wife has been lured away and that Ivan is being held. Khan demands that Delmonda let Ivan go. Judging him for his transgressions is Khan's responsibility. Delmonda says they will judge him jointly, or they must part ways. But Marla urges Khan not to act hastily. The Elborians have been gathering the remnants of their crashed ship, and Delmonda says they were trying to salvage enough of it to build a pod to escape the planet. But it isn't for us, Delmonda explains. It's for you, the humans. Khan and Marla are shocked. Meanwhile, back on the Excelsior, Sulu has ordered Tuvok to shadow Dr. Lear and spy on her research. She twigs to this and lays Tuvok out, like, what gives, Tuvok? Why are you tracking me? Tuvok urges her to be more open about her motives. What are you doing? What is the end of this research? And she finally relents and admits She finally relents and admits that she got the first set of recordings. Remember those back when they were having that hearing in episode one? Those recordings came from none other than Delmonda. What? Delmonda. Reveal? Apparently, Delmonda somehow got off the planet, they speculate, but they don't know. Also, Mado's baby died. And yes, and Ursula reamed out Khan for saying they could try again. Why would I want to bring anybody into this hellhole, into this disaster area that you led us into? So that's the broad strokes.
Out of your mind?
Yes. Broad strokes. I think that sums up everything.
It does. Wow. So the baby, this is MacGyver's baby that's doing the research. And her stepdad is this alien guy named Dermando, right?
Wait,
did you picture him as blue or green? I pictured him as blue.
They said they were silver and pearly.
Oh, okay.
So I pictured them as pearlescent, and they maybe had a little lavender, like a pearlescent lavender, okay, with silver hair, like okay, a silver mane. But for some reason, I kept on thinking of, like, I think it's maybe the movie Trolls, or I just keep seeing a monster movie. It's from the 80s or the 90s with like a little imp with gray skin and white hair. What okay am I thinking of?
Golden Girls.
Somebody, thank you. Finally.
That's it.
Betty White.
Exactly. I was thinking Estelle Getty, but, you know, picture it. SETI Alpha 5.
Oh, my God.
1923.
Did the SETI Alpha 4.
Yes. This is SETI Alpha 5. So I'm like, I'm dreading this. I'm listening to it. I'm not enjoying it. I'm like, oh. And then, like, the aliens come along, and I'm like, that's it. That's I'm gone. I'm checking out. But I can't.
That made you check out, huh?
Kind of. And it's not like we haven't seen many, many aliens in Star Trek. Of course, there's aliens all over. You know, Tuvok's an alien. They're more aliens. They're like mysterious, like the Greys or something. You know, that's what I pictured. And they have these mental powers to destroy guns and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yet they still crash. So their technology is way advanced, but not the ultimate, survivals. What are your first impressions on this? These two contiguous Khan episodes.
Again, I found the alien crash unexpected and intriguing, but at the end of the day, the show is losing me for various reasons, which we'll discuss. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're saying that you're not enjoying it at all. So what are your first impressions of this episode?
There's pieces. I was kind of enjoying picturing the underground sea, because one of my favorite classic movies is Journey to the Center of the Earth. So that evoked memories of that for me. Mm-hmm, the one with who stars in that? Like a singer from the 50s or something.
Rod Steiger and Raquel Welch. These are names I'm just making up.
It could have been, but I don't think it is.
And with a special appearance by F. Murray Abraham.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, okay. You know,
the plastic surgery.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that's one of my favorite things. But then later on, they said the sea, it's like, there's no sun, obviously, but there's no light source, right? So it's dark in there? Did they
I'm trying to figure out, like, in my mind's eye, I'm trying to figure out, is there, like, bioluminescence somehow in the cave that gives them,
something,
or they're,
right?
I know they're carrying around lamps, because they're talking about lamps.
Okay, so like a gas lamp.
So, but I mean, is this still first impressions? Are you getting into?
I don't know.
I just want to tell people out there how they can reach us.
Yeah, you do your thing.
Let me do the spiel, all right?
Okay.
Because we're going to go so far afield and all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place. I got to get this all out.
Yeah, exactly. Let me take care of house first, okay?
You do that.
So before we commence our SETI spiel, see what I did there?
This is SETI spiel.
Before we get into our SETI Alpha jive, see what jive I did there? We want to know what you think, so you can reach us right here on the YouTube channel. We want you to like, subscribe, and share Trek Exploration with those that you know and love, fellow Trekkers, fellow family members, anybody that you think would enjoy this. That's youtube.com/@Trek Exploration. You can also support the show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Trek Exploration. There you will find many levels and tiers, and supplant those tiers, surmount those tiers, dry your tears, and support us on Patreon. We have tiers that go all the way from cadet to admiral and many levels in between. You can go see that.
Captain is our most popular level.
And we are live now. We can finally say, hey, we're live here on YouTube. Hype this video.
Hype it.
Hype it. You can hype this video now. I don't know what that means, but if you hype it, something good will happen.
Super
Maybe
chat.
Confetti. Super chat. Super chat. It's not okay. So we super chat it. You hype it when we're not live.
And you I don't super know chat if you it can when you, it while okay. it's live. What if
I don't
you
know.
Could?
Hype it. Super chat it. Just do something. Do
super
something.
Chat. Yeah, and we'll read all the super chats unless it's we're, like we're, bro.
We hear you, Rolf for Taraco.
Rolf for Taraco.
Super chat us. Become a YouTube Ruffalo member. Talking. Like I said, like, subscribe, share. You can also follow us on Blue Sky. That's at trexploration.bluesky.social. You can email us anything you'd like, your opinions, your photos, your voicemails. You can do voice things, too. That's trexplorationpod@gmail.com. You can
send
us
videos, pictures.
Send us physical media, anything you'd like. That's P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. You can see a couple of pictures behind me that are a wonderful cadet. Listen, Linda did in the style of Star Trek Scouts. If you are not watching our reviews of Star Trek Scouts, I can't help you. I mean, I think that they are the best shows we've ever done. You can also support the show in a one-time manner. We have so many ways that Albie has devised here. We have QR codes for PayPal, QR codes for Zelle, QR code for Venmo, or QR code for cash? How does that work?
Cash app.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. They're all the same thing, I think. There's on the edited ones, there'll be like QR codes and stuff.
Right. So I forgot. You can't pop them up right now.
Find those.
Yeah, you'll have to find. And there'll be links below at some point. So you can find all that stuff down below. And please, if you decide to support the show in a one-time manner or a regular manner, just let everybody know how much you love it. And please accept our thanks for everything you do to keep Trexploration going.
Ruffalo Taco says he's working on sending you stuff.
Oh, hello to the P.O. Box 542, awesome. Bayport, New York, 11705.
Yeah, so we don't forget, shoebox is full of cash.
Shoebox is full of 20s. That's another way to send us a one-time donation. And we want to thank everybody who supports the show currently. Those would include our patrons, our special lifetime member, the Omnipotent Willard. And the rest of our crew of intrepid Trexplorers. They include our cadets, Liz and Linda and Rick Tatro, our lieutenant commanders, Scott Seligman, Cosplay Dad, and Kristen Daljo, and of course our captain, the esteemed Captain Charles from Texas, Captain on the Bridge. We want to thank all of you for supporting the show, and we want to thank all of our free members as well. There are many people on the Patreon site that are just there as part of the community. Thank you so much for subscribing there.
I think.
Thank you so much for subscribing here. If you do subscribe, you get exclusive content. We have, I think, released a video that shows kind of what we do with the Peacemaker finale.
Yep, but that one was open so people could get a taste.
They get an eyeful. You get an eyeful
if they
of what,
really want
what
to
we're
taste
doing.
It.
Yep. So they really, really, really want it. I'm hoping they do. And just please do everything you can to spread the word about Trexploration. And I think that's it. Did I miss anything?
I think that's all of it.
Yeah, I think that's all of it. So thanks one and all.
Christian, he said he inquired about a shirt. So maybe I think I'll get the store up and running.
Oh, we should be getting the store up and running. We have so many great, great logos and different kinds of content that we can put on shirts and mugs and stuff. Thanks to our graphic designer, Scott Madison, of the aforementioned.
Let me know if we can put those crayon drawings on shirts.
I think that we have permission to do that. Now they're ours.
Okay, cool.
Now they're ours, Linda.
Yeah, I think there's a disclaimer somewhere in that announcement, right?
No. Thank you, Scott Madison.
You say may be used on a shirt.
Yes, maybe used on a future episode of Star Trek Trexploration or on Trexploration merch.
Yes.
We consider it a donation of intellectual property. Thank you very much.
It's just so good.
Yeah,
it
is.
Seen by more than just us.
It has to be. So I just want to encourage anyone who might be watching live right now to comment, and we'll be featuring those comments throughout the show. This is Friday Night Live. We just decided last second to do this. So thank you all for logging on and watching. We hope that you enjoy this discussion of Con, and we want to hear what you think either in the comments down below or here live as we're podcasting live.
Both. So both are good. Both are good. So, hey, this is a normal show, right?
This is a normal show, yes.
So, we got to do some catch up. Should we talk some more about Con or should we talk more about catch up?
Oh, well, ketchup. Well, you tell me what you've been doing, because every time we talk, I feel like I'm doing the ketchup stuff.
Oh, well,
I mean, I have
life.
Done some stuff. I have done some stuff, but tell me about you. What's going on in the world of Albie Birch?
Let's see. I usually go to the movies a lot. We haven't really. I did just go see Kiss of the Spider-Woman, the new J-Lo movie.
Oh,
apparently it's a remake, but it's a remake of the musical that was made out of the Raul Julia movie, which I didn't see. I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. I'd say go check it out. It's kind of half musical, half drama, and like political wartime prisoner intrigue. It's pretty good.
Okay. Is it like, remember that movie that came out that was the Oscar darling about the transgender drug dealer? It had Selena Gomez and Zoe Saldana.
What
was it called?
I didn't watch that.
Alana Garnaccia or something like that?
Yeah, I wanted to watch it when I heard about it, but then everybody in the trans community was really saying it's horrible. This is not, you know, doesn't represent our community, so I didn't watch it.
I watched it because everybody was saying it was interesting, and it was interesting. But the reason I bring it up is because it had musical parts, but it like wasn't a musical. It was extremely well put together, and like this, like, and I'm wondering if the Kiss of the Spider-Woman is like that. You're saying it's a musical, but it's almost I can't explain what the difference is.
Yeah,
maybe because musicals annoy me, and this didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, a lot of people are saying that with Kiss of the Spider-Woman. Yeah, that other movie, I saw what Jesse had to say, Jesse Gender, on it, and she said no, so I was like, okay, no.
All right, well.
But Kiss of the Spider-Woman, yeah, it's about two guys in prison in Argentina, I want to say. And, you know, they don't want to be where they are, so they're, like, trying to distract each other, and one tells the story of his favorite movie. So for us, it would be Back to the Future, Back to the Future 2. Mm. We just tell each other, and eventually they end up cuddling and stuff. He's talking about Kiss of the Spider-Woman, the old movie that's a musical. So it has musical numbers, but it's told by an unreliable narrator. And then people are playing multiple parts. I think J-Lo plays four parts. But so it was, I think, directed and maybe written by the guy who did the movie version of Chicago. So I was really expecting something spectacular. It wasn't that, but it was good.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're a fan of Chicago.
I enjoyed it.
I'm
glad I saw it on the big screen. Because, you know, what the musical numbers were very 1950s big and, you know,
like
one
Busby,
shot.
Like Busby Busby Berkeley, like kind of like Big Lebowski big.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that, like a Taylor Swift video.
All right.
Ruffalo Taco says, I saw the Raul Julia Kiss of the Spider-Woman on late night TV. I heard it's not a musical. So I was like, that's weird. Like a movie that's half musical without the musical. And I was like, I don't know if I want to watch that. Raul Julia, he was in The Escape Artist, right?
I don't know. I know he played Gomez Adams, though, in the rebooted Adams Family Angelica Houston.
Angelica Houston. That was a good
one. I almost said Angelique Pettyjohn because I'm thinking Gamesters of Triskelion.
The other thing is I'm working on two businesses right now, but we'll talk about those as they come out. There's
look at you, Mr. Entrepreneur.
Yeah, trying to make the ends meet and make the ends that meet out of meat.
Okay.
It's expensive right now. The other thing is, you had mentioned, Jacob's Ladder on our last recording.
Yes. I spoiled Jacob's Ladder on our last recording. Apparently I didn't realize, that you hadn't seen it.
If you hadn't spoiled it, I probably wouldn't have watched it, you know, cause I was telling Allison and you, I think in the chat is I confuse that with Lorenzo's Oil. Don't ask
which
me
I've
how.
Never seen.
There's a name and a possessive and then some noun, right?
Okay. All right.
But I have to say the movie freaked me out, but in a great way. I thought it was beautiful artistic.
It's a freaky movie.
It's a great movie. And the weirdest part is I'm watching Jacob's Ladder as I'm going through my own Jacob's Ladder, right? this past year, since my near-death experience, it's been a lot like this movie. And I'm watching this movie and I'm getting all freaked out. I'm like, holy crap, maybe I just need to let go, you know?
Well, I have to say that if you guys don't realize it, we were discussing Jacob's Ladder in reference to the third episode of Star Trek Scouts, The Chalk Meteor.
Yeah, very similar. Very similar
to
the two.
Again, if you're not watching our Star Trek Scouts videos, you are completely missing out on the most interesting Star Trek podcasting I think you'll ever hear.
Mm-hmm. And
I don't say so myself.
Modern Star Trek series there is, I think.
Rolfer Taraco says Jacob used Lorenzo's oil on his ladder.
That's what I thought.
He had to let go because his hands were slipping.
I haven't seen Lorenzo's Oil either. I just heard of both of them and it was like, I don't want to watch that, but I was wrong.
I feel like Lorenzo's Oil, I want to say, has Jessica Lange and Nick Nolte. I could
and
be it, wrong
And it's about they're
that.
Trying to find medicine for their kid. And, is what
for
I
their
understand.
Son, yeah, or something like that. Maybe it's Lorenzo's.
But it turned out they never had a kid.
They need oil for Lorenzo. And
they make the fries.
They go far and wide. They start doing a road trip to all of the fast food restaurants.
Vacuuming out the old grease. Where do you stand on Sesame
Oil?
People
either
love it or hate
it. Your grease trap, sir. Your grease trap.
Need it to help a boy.
I've only ever used sesame oil when we had a walk for a hot second. We still have it somewhere, mm-hmm. and we were using it a lot. But this is a weird thing about my wife. She'll love something, so she'll make me make it a lot. So I was using sesame oil a lot, doing like stir fry vegetables and chicken and stuff, and rice and making like fried rice. And then all of a sudden, the worm turns, and she decides she doesn't like it anymore, and we haven't taken the walk out in 25 years. So it's been a while, but I'll tell you, grapeseed oil is good for treating all of your cast iron pans because it's got a low smoke point and it'll create that barrier that you need. And here's what I discovered since getting into the cast iron scene, baby. You do not want to season your pans and cure them in the oven because the house will stink for a week and a half. What you want to do is drag the grill out from the shed and put that puppy up as high as it will go, and then let it get good and hot, and then put the pan on the grill outside where all the smell will go away, and then you have a beautiful seasoned pan, and you can do that once or twice a year, and your pan will stay spick and span. So,
see, you're a chef. I'm a cook. So I go to you for advice on quality. Because I'm using nonstick that go through the dishwasher. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a few of those, but it's just like, what's the point? They're just crappy pans. You know, and it's only me and Laura, so I don't have to worry about much. And I don't know. Anyway, I just enjoy it.
Maybe we'll visit again. Bring a walk.
It's an indulgence. It's an indulgence. I made you guys fake eggs with margarine.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, in the stainless steel pan. The weirdest thing is the margarine, like, soaked into the stainless steel. Like, it just disappeared.
It's vegetable oil and water, so.
Yeah, it just was crazy. It was just crazy. Yeah,
probably got to take some whale blubber and reseason.
This is what I did for Albie when he and Rennie came to visit. I bought, like, because they said they wanted margarine, and Albie gave me a list of, like, acceptable foods because Rennie is vegan, you know?
What?
So
now
I wanted to make sure. Well, I wanted to make sure that she could eat while she was here. So Albie gave me, and he said Imperial Margarine. I said, okay, it's 1973. I have to find Imperial Margarine. Let me get in my DeLorean.
It's $1.19 a pound.
And go to the A&P.
Tastes good in potatoes, though.
And I did find Imperial Margarine, but it was in a thing of like 4 to 6 bricks of Imperial Margarine. We used like 4 pats. And then he left, and I threw it away. Because there was no way for you to take it with you. It was freaking margarine.
Yeah, that's true. We could have, but it would have dripped the whole way, and it wouldn't be
exactly
worth saving $1.24. So, people slipping and sliding on the train.
I'm telling you.
Leaking margarine. Yeah, she uses butter now, though, so that's good.
You know, that'll make things easier next
time. The pizza crust comes right off the pan with butter.
Butter is good for you. Yeah, anyway. Yeah. So
that's good. Okay. So sesame oil. Okay. Yeah. So we were talking about Khan. And so you're saying they're pearl aliens. They're pearl looking. See, why
pearlescent.
Do I picture bluer? I was thinking something from Solar Opposites, I think.
I get pearlescent lavender. Pearlescent lavender. The first transistor radios ever made, Regency, I want to say X1, but maybe I'm thinking NX. But they're Regency, and they came in like 5 or 6 colors. And I was obsessed when I first got like into radios, reading about all of these things. And one of the colors that they mentioned in this book was pearlescent lavender. And I've always wondered, I've never seen a picture, but I have no idea what pearlescent lavender looks like, but these aliens in my mind are pearlescent lavender because radio. And it's a radio show. So see, it's circles within circles. It all tracks.
Yeah, maybe it's an homage, a callback. Why did the aliens bump me? Did I forget there were aliens?
They bump me because you weren't expecting. This is I think the aliens bump you because it undercuts the entire story that Khan gives when Chekhov finds him 1 study off of 5. And there were two reasons. Number one, they've done a really good job in this podcast, if nothing else, of fleshing out Khan as a three-dimensional character. So the part of this that bumped me goes hand in hand with the discovery of the aliens, because in these episodes, Khan is just acting like a freaking idiot. He is so distrustful of these aliens who seem to be too good to be true,
right,
because of his own limitations, that he just refuses to do anything but be belligerent. And it's just like all of a sudden he's become that over the top cartoony mustache twirly villain that we were afraid the series was going to focus on. And also, okay, these aliens. Hi, Johnny. Johnny J just joined us.
Yo, what's up?
Yo, Johnny J. I think that the aliens put a wrinkle in where did Khan survive? Did they all survive because of his intelligence? Or is he just giving Chekhov like a line of BS? That's what bumped me about it. Because, it kind of contradicts the whole superiority thing.
But I've been reflecting on it, and I've had a change of heart about it.
Okay.
These 2 weeks. Because we're kind of like also poo-pooing the idea that it's just a story that's in between two stories that's got a foregone conclusion. And we did get kind of guess some of the things like the Khan's kid escaping, which, of course, it's going to be on that little small craft that they're doing. They're going to do a Superman for the kid, I guess, just to research her parents. Anyway.
I didn't even think of that. I guess maybe that could be. They could send her
out. Baby gets out of there, I'm guessing, right?
Moses Among the Reeds, right?
Yes, which is a retelling of a retelling. It's a classic story.
The classic story of the abandoned baby.
it just... The aliens was... Like, at first, I'm bumping up against it because there should be no aliens in this story. It should be the people and Khan, and they get found on the planet, and it's a desert, and he's got the thing on his mask, and he takes it off, and he holds up Chekhov. But we're also wondering, how did Kirk and Spock not notice that the SETI Alpha
6
was going to explode?
Yes.
Well, now we have other reasons. Now there's other characters and things happening we don't know, so that might be why. And I think Khan in this episode, one of the two episodes, he was saying, Kirk abandoned us here knowing that this was going to happen. But he didn't really. He's kind of just blaming the butterfly effect and fate of, this happens and that happens and then other thousand things happen because of that one choice. But I don't think it was, intentional. So I don't think we'll find that. But it gave me, after bumping me and saying I'm out because of the aliens, I was like, well, maybe there's some more story here that we weren't expecting. Thoughts?
I mean, obviously, it was unexpected to me. There was no alien even remotely in my mind. So, again, I was actually excited. I have to say, when episode 5 started out, I felt like a rush, like a thrill, because it's something we've been waiting to get to. You heard this immense boom. And I thought, okay, I guess sound can travel through the vacuum of space, but at least it's an audio rendering of, the explosion of SETI Alpha 6.
Like when Praxis explodes, right?
Finally the other shoe is dropped, and we're finally here at this pivotal moment in the story of Khan, and I got like this rush. I was like, oh my goodness. And then they're saying, well, no, it wasn't a chunk of SETI Alpha 6. It was actually a crash landing spaceship. And I was just like, whoa, too much everywhere all at once. It's just you turn this story up to 11 with two things, one that we expected, one we didn't expect. And I don't know if there's a genius in that because, again, it's something that you were expecting and now it's finally happened. Could it be anticlimactic because you know where the story goes? Oh, no, Hotshot. You don't really know where the story goes. This is accompanied by this thing. So I guess what you're saying has some validity, but it just, how do they execute it now?
Well, I think Khan's people are going to go against his wishes and kill all the aliens except for the one that escapes, with Khan and MacGyver's baby?
Fernando.
Fernando. Hernando. Hernandez?
There was something in the cave that
for Draco. Fernando. Yeah. So that's where I'm thinking it's going. But I could be wrong because I had no idea aliens were coming about.
Yeah.
So this is episode 6. There's 3 more after this, right?
Well, 6. This is episode 5 and 6. So we got 7, yeah. 8. You know why 5 was, why 6 was afraid of, 5 was afraid of 6? Why was 6 afraid of 7? I can't even do the joke.
Why, Chris? 6, 7. 6, 7.
Because 7, 8, 9 now.
7 did eat 9. That's funny. Woo! Wow, I want to watch that holodeck program.
God, you just made it after dark. You took the dumbest dad
always.
Joke
well,
ever.
It's like is after dark. Even
kindergarten
on the
joke.
Now,
kindergarten joke.
It's great.
Oh, 6, 7, 6, 7.
Did you watch the South Park, the new one?
I did. I watched it last night. That's I don't understand what 6, 7 means, but
oh,
I don't think I'm meant to. Yeah.
You want to know or not?
No, I read that it was like some kind of TikTok meme.
It was, yeah, it was from just a rap song, and then it became a description of a basketball player that was 6'7".
Oh.
And then another person with a meme did this, and now it's a thing. So
it's just
funny.
A thing, I think, to be absurd. It's just absurdity yes. for absurdity's sake.
The generation divide is people who think 6'9 is funny and people who think 6'7 is funny.
Ah,
I think we're
I
right.
See.
I think we're right.
I think we're right, too.
I think we're right.
Yeah, yeah. But all right, where were we? Oh, aliens.
Aliens and the underground sea and the
69ing,
caves. And
69ing aliens.
69ing aliens, yes. The lavender pearlescent.
The pearlescent lavender 69ing aliens.
Yes, yes.
With the freaky exactly. mind control powers. Okay, so.
He said the title.
So what I really liked was the subversion of my expectation, but then the episode. All of the episodes, but these last two especially, get bogged down in so much needless talking. And that sounds weird to say about a radio play.
Right.
But Rolf Fertraco says 7 of 9 is sexy.
I agree.
I think that is really, that's an outlier, that opinion, Rolf Fertraco.
Yeah.
Nobody else
thinks
that.
That thought is constantly in my head.
That's like saying Scott Bakula is sexy. Nobody
exactly.
thinks that.
Yeah.
But it starts with this ponderous exchange between Sulu and Lear about the nature of evil and why do you want to dig up Khan? And nothing is actually being revealed. It's just one idea pitted against another idea and almost like a little thought experiment of how would you have this argument? And to me, it connotes filler. Mm-hmm. So, because it doesn't really do anything to advance the story, it's just that we understand that you're diametrically opposed, that Sulu thinks that Khan belongs on the ash heap of history as history's greatest mistake, and Lear is just like, no, we have to understand him, and we have to know how monsters are made, and it's just this back and forth that I did not find, that's one of many, so let's start with that one. Did you find that in any way compelling?
Which part?
Where they're discussing whether or not Khan should be reexamined, or the merits of like how evil is evil made, is evil born, is Khan a topic
because
worthy of further historical research?
Originally, I thought, you know, yes, evil's made, not born, but he was genetically engineered to be born evil, pretty much. You know?
So you're saying he's made to be born? Was he born
no,
born
he,
to be alive?
He was made to be a tyrant. You know, that's what he was genetically
It's another thing
for.
I'm so confused about. We'll go into that as well.
Yeah, like why did they do that?
Yeah, Johnny is asking, why am I not recognizing these aliens? Are they Allorians or something like that? No, they're not Allorians. They're called Eldorians, and we've never seen them before. I looked that up.
Something I hadn't heard of. Maybe that was another thing, too. It wasn't
Eldorians.
Like Romulans. It wasn't, you know, the continuum. It wasn't something I'm familiar with.
I don't mind that, actually.
No, it was okay. My brain went to Little Green Men for some reason.
So they're Eldorians, and we haven't seen them. They're new to the franchise as of this. Mm-hmm. They're new canon. And let's see, maybe they'll show up somewhere else, somewhere in the future.
It seemed like filler, but maybe this is going to be the story within the story within the story that we're actually meant to enjoy.
I wanted to say that they did this so that they could give George something to do. And I think a lot of this jives, quite frankly, with George's personal politics. And it meets the moment for him because mm-hmm. he's just speaking against evil for evil's sake and unprocessed pain. And I can understand why that appealed to him, especially if you follow him on social media, considering mm-hmm. the state of affairs currently politically in the United States of America and him being an American with strong opinions. So, mm-hmm. We don't need to get political, but it was almost like giving George an opportunity to get on a particular soapbox that he relishes, which is great, but does it make for interesting radio? I'm not so sure.
I'm a little bit interested in Tuvok having a different mindset than Sulu. What did you think about that?
I kind of like that. If we're going to stay on the Excelsior stuff, the fact that Sulu is so closed-minded, where Sulu, I don't think he would be. But then you have Tuvok, who is Mr. By the Book, like so by the book that his captain orders him to spy on somebody. He's like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. To me, it was almost like when you know, Anakin turns to the dark side, and 4 seconds after he does, they say, okay, go kill that building full of little kids. And he's like, yeah, sure, okay, I'll do that. But I don't know Tuvok enough to know if that's something. I know he was like a security guy, and he was undercover in the Maquis, so obviously he's okay with subterfuge. Johnny J says, I bumped on Vlad easily killing one of the aliens when they defeated Khan's team effortlessly. I bumped on that too, but they gave a good explanation for that.
And we've got to remember Vlad's made out of metal, right?
I think they talk about Ivan, not Vlad.
Ivan.
Yeah.
Ivan. Oh. Yeah. Ivan's made out of metal. Yeah.
Is he? Okay. I didn't know.
Yeah. That's how I'm picturing him. X-Men.
Okay, gotcha. So you tell me, is that within keeping with Tuvok's character that he would so readily spy on Dr. Lear?
My brain just instantly chalked it up to like Ensign Tuvok versus, you know, Commander Tuvok, is it? Difference between Commander Riker and Ensign Riker, you know, on the Pegasus, that kind of thing.
That's not an answer. I don't understand. Elaborate.
He's much younger in his career, and he might not balk at certain orders yet.
Do you think that if Janeway had given him that order, he would have balked?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay,
but although he was, you know, well, dealing with the Maquis, he was almost like a police force on his own, and he did stuff that most people wouldn't agree with. I think so. Maybe he's always had it in him.
That's what I was thinking anyway, because if he has it in him to go into deep cover and infiltrate the Maquis, then maybe he has no problem performing, I don't want to say lie, but misrepresenting himself for a greater purpose. How about that?
Yes, going on his mission. Does he have a separate interest than Captain Sulu in this? Is he think that there's a possibility that Kirk and Spock were knowingly sent Khan to his death?
I don't think that he thinks that, but what I did like is the fact that he's not just echoing Sulu. To your original point, I'm sorry I didn't really answer your question. Let me answer it
now.
No
problem.
I think that that's great. I think that that is something that helps make the Excelsior part of this story a little bit more interesting, because you have Sulu who's trying to be a good ensign and do what his captain asks of him. Yet he's privately to Lear expressing his own doubts about Sulu's stance, copping to the fact that Lear might have a valid point in at least exploring this further just for history's sake, and not so blindly against the idea that maybe there was something else going on and maybe Kirk was involved somehow. To what extent, we don't know. I don't think that Tuvok thinks it's any great extent, but Tuvok doesn't have the same personal baggage of friendship that Sulu does with all of the icons of Starfleet with whom he served for 50 years. So you can understand why he's just having none of it. And Tuvok
I'm agreeing with what you're saying because, you know, he was there.
Right, exactly.
But he's approaching it as his personal history influencing his thoughts, trying to see the data that supported his theory, but not only theory, but his experience, where Tuvok is doing it more scientifically minded, not starting out with an idea and looking for evidence that supports that, but mm-hmm. just looking at the evidence and seeing what the evidence supports.
He also acts as a counter to Lear, who also seems to have her own agenda. And it reminded me of a scene in Frasier when Daphne decided to leave and Frasier and Martin were fighting. And Martin says, you know how, you know, when you have two hard pieces of cookie, but they have the cream in the middle, otherwise they break. Mm-hmm. Tuvok is the cream in the middle. I told you this was after dark. So I think that it's especially important to have Tuvok here. They used his character the best, I think, because he finally spurred on the admonition by Lear that she's getting this stuff from apparently the Elborian Delmonda. So Delmonda has got to be somehow existing, even if he's calling to her across time. Who the hell knows? But
I'm thinking the whole Superman thing, except he went with her.
But at least we got a motive here. Yeah. Finally, she's just like, and that's supposed to be a big reveal, but we still don't know what her motive is. It's just that we now know why she's looking. What spurred her to do this? Did Delmonda give more information that could somehow incriminate Kirk? She still seems to have a real hard-on for Kirk, is what I'm saying. And it's just like, what is the deal? What is the deal? I did that for you.
Johnny J says he had no problem spying on the Maquis later in his career. Very true.
Yeah. So that was the Tuvok story. So I think that if we're going to have an MVP for carrying the story along, it's going to be Tim.
Yeah.
On this. Did you find that at least his involvement in giving this some more nuance made it a bit more palatable? Or are you still kind of just too little too late?
I enjoyed more of the Tuvok and the Sulu stuff because I'm not enjoying the character that's the framing device. What's her name?
Rosalind Lear. Who
Lear?
I just want to say it, and I don't mean to be mean, but the actress is just not very good. It seems to me she's reading. Now I'm reading angry. Now I'm reading.
Not my bag of shells. Not my cup of tea.
I don't like to do that, but I don't know.
So far, you know, unless she was raised by Armando, and that's why she's awkward and weird and angry. I don't know. Armando Del Monte.
Sorry, Sonia Cassidy. You can reach out and tell us we're jerks, but
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if it was the direction. I don't know what it, but I'm just not buying Lear, the performance given as Lear in this.
So I like more of the Tuvok and the Sulu stuff when it comes to the Excelsior. But it also gave me another theory idea that my brain's going with. Because since we don't know about this, like, alien people being on SETI Alpha 5 and Delmondo and all this stuff, to me, what if Tuvok on Voyager to pass the time is solving mysteries made up in the holodeck based on historical events like Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan?
I'm confused. So are we seeing a Tuvok hollow adventure?
Yes.
Or is this going to be fodder for one that he has later in his life?
No, we're watching Tuvok and at the end, he's going to say end program. And Janeway will just be like, what have you been doing in here?
Look how Janeway becomes Picard, too.
Oh, that would be great. So basically,
accent.
Tuvok didn't want to be the chef on Enterprise. He wanted to be the ensign on the Excelsior during the SETI Alpha 5 investigation. I don't know.
Okay, listen, whatever gets you through, if this is what like a whole meta story going on to help you get through the story that we're actually listening to,
it's a coping
mechanism. Blame you. I can tell you
it's
what, man, your brain is really freaking creative.
I'm trying to enjoy it any way I can. I'm liking the con stuff. I don't know.
We're going to have to wait. Johnny has a hot take here. Johnny has a hot take. of Rosalind Lear. Her voice acting isn't great, but her character is the only somewhat compelling part of this story. To me, she just drags the story to a screeching halt every single time she gets on mic. So I really want to know, Johnny, why you think this character is so compelling. We'll read your comments as we keep talking.
Yeah.
But I at least there's a break in the facade. So maybe now, finally, because we only have three episodes left, if
this
we can
season
get some kind of motivation for Lear, maybe that'll go a long way to making that part of the
story
more
compelling.
We'll
get it at the end, maybe the last episode.
I hope not.
Like, and this is why.
But again, I'll start repeating myself when we talk about it more. I just, like I said, the Lear thing is the only thing that we don't know how it ends. It should be the most compelling part of the show because it's the only thing that could leave us with a surprise or
now,
so. But
didn't
the
they leave
fact
us
that
with
I
a
just,
mystery at the
I
end
just
of part
don't
six?
Care.
I don't even remember what it is. Yeah. What was the mystery? The one thing we have to find out was.
No, well, where's Del Mondo? Is Armando, is Fernando
still...
Oh, how did
he get off the planet?
How did he get off the planet? Is he still alive? He somehow got off the planet. And she said, well, not necessarily so. We have to listen to the tapes or something like that. Okay, Johnny says that the reason that Lear is the most marginally interesting character, the mystery of why she's gunning for Kirk is what really grabs him. Exactly. I want to know her motivation. It doesn't...
I want to know...
Okay, we're going to go back, Johnny, into something that we've said before. To me, the Lear thing is a much more mystery box element to this that is just useless for drama's sake. And it's a formula that I have soured on over the last few years, especially on streaming shows that should be packed with content because there are only 10 episodes, yet they waste so much time on needless mysteries that if you told them from episode one, the prologue of the first season of Picard should have been the threat that they're facing, not getting 8.5 episodes in to find out that it's robots from the future. Why is it less compelling to know who your adversary is? Why do you have to have a giant mystery as to who exactly you're fighting? It's just lazy, lazy. Sorry, we're live.
And we're live.
And we're live, but I didn't, at least I didn't do the F-bomb. So
thank
that's for you, Linda.
You might be able to still monetize this a little.
we're going to fight. That's it. You and me. You and me, Johnny. I'm rolling
Tuvok,
up my sleeves.
from the conversation between Tuvok and Lear, it seems like Tuvok is privy to everything Lear is, at least as much as we are of her listening to the logs.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because at first that kind of bumped me, too, because he seemed to know all about Zaldamo. And
so he got caught being in the records, but he was in the records. Right?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I guess that he's listened to and read everything that she's reported on up until that point. So he is as caught up as she is at that. So I could say it took me a couple of seconds to realize, how does he know about this? Oh, well, yeah, he's been snooping over her shoulder. So that's how he knows about it. So, Johnny also wrote that because Ivan, we had mentioned that Ivan killed, and he's saying, Johnny wrote that I bumped on Ivan easily killing one of them when they defeated Khan's team effortlessly. I think that Zaldamo gave a good explanation for that. They're part of like this collective. What did he call it, Albie? Do you remember?
The Denouement.
Right, Zaldamo and the Denouement.
The Zoe Saldana.
Right.
The Panda Bear. Was it the Panda
Bear? The Pandem. It was the Pandem. Thank you. Yes.
The Pandem.
The Pandem. So when they join forces of their minds, then they can do things like bend the metal. And I guess if they wanted to kill you, even though that's not their bag, Dad.
Yeah, they don't seem to be violent, really.
But when they're alone.
Is it a cookbook?
When they're alone, it might be. You don't know. When they're alone, they're vulnerable. It takes the collective effort of the community, the Pandem, to give them the strength that they have. But when they're alone, they can be picked off just like anybody else. So, and apparently Ivan stomped this guy to death. So
do you think the Pandem did something to SETI Alpha 6 to help it along its explosion?
I don't know. I mean,
were they investigating what happened? Because we didn't really get any more on that, did we?
No, they just, I think that they were surveying, and then the planet exploded, and their ship got caught up in it, and I think that was it. I don't recall how they crashed.
Correlation isn't causation, but it's suspicious.
That's where I think I might jive with Khan a little bit. They're not saying everything, and Marla even said, but I think it was the way that Zaldamo tried to fob it off.
Yeah.
Was that he didn't want them to realize that they are vulnerable when they're separated because mm-hmm. it's a weakness and they still don't trust Khan. But again, I think that might just be another thing that he's throwing up. I still think another shoe is going to drop with the aliens. How about you?
Yeah, there's got to be something there. My thought was it's a cookbook. And they want them to go underground in these caves because they're their food source.
Hmm. Right? So they're using Morlocks and Eloy?
Exactly. Time machine.
I tell you. All right.
Weird question. Like, the most frightening part of these two episodes for me were when they were on that raft in the dark sea, underground sea. Mm-hmm. Like, if something was alive down there, I mean, they couldn't find anything, like fish for seafood or something. But if there's no sun, of course, there's probably not an ecosystem unless it's close to, like, thermal vents or something.
Right.
But I would think, I'm not going in there because something's going to eat me. Because who knows what's huge down there in the dark water? I don't know. Scared me. Kind of like Open Water. You ever see that movie?
I did see Open Water, yes.
Yeah, it scared the crap out of me. That part where it's like black for like 5 minutes, just black screen, and you're just hearing the surround sound and the sharks in the water. And I screamed out loud
watching
it at home by myself. I was so frightened. And I don't get scared. I don't get scared, but it was the theater of the mind again, I think.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry that this brought back that trauma. I just thought it was two boring people on a boat talking. But yeah. Oh, look, he bent Khan's blade. It was Joachim and I forget the name of the, it's not, it's Angela, Andrea?
Angela. Hey, yo, Angela. Joachim? New one-man gang. I'm not sure.
I don't know what that means, but I'll take your word for it.
Okay. But is there Joachim and Joachim?
No. So Joachim was the guy that was in Space Seed who was... Joachim's dad. And Joachim is half human, like Spock. Half human, half augment, even though he's all human.
And Joachim, he's in Star Trek 2, right?
Yeah, he's...
Okay.
What's his face? Who didn't get credited? And then he was in the Just Say No to Drugs episode, too.
The blonde guy from...
That guy. That guy.
Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I know him now, yeah.
So everybody down below knows. Everybody out there listening or watching right now going nuts, saying his name, yelling his name.
Write it in the comments.
Yeah, write it in the comments. So
yeah, Ruffalo Taco says Joaquin Phoenix.
So, but they pronounce it Joaquin, and I think that's because Joaquin, because that's how Khan pronounces it in Wrath of Khan.
Joaquin is a new
name, also,
but his original name was One Man Gang.
That's also what all of Akeem's friends, how they called him out on the street in Queens in Coming to America. Yo, Akeem. How's it going? Okay.
So, the doctors didn't want to walk too far, right, to get the medical supplies. So they're breaking down this wall. And you know what? Was your head going where I was going before, like, just the rubble and this underground rock slide or whatever it was? I was thinking when they break open this wall, it's going to be another like nest of those eels.
Oh, I didn't think of that. No, I saw the rock slide. My mind went to the obvious place, and that's exactly where the story went.
Okay.
More disaster. I even called Godot, waiting for Godot.
Waiting for Godot.
Are you going to go see that? No. I'm not a huge fan of what's his face?
Keanu.
Alex, yeah, Winter? Alex Winter is okay. Keanu Reeves leaves
Bill
me
and
cold.
Ted, really?
That a friend of mine. I liked Bill and Ted, but they're not playing Bill and Ted.
No,
my friend Sarah just made me watch Point Break. And it's like watching wallpaper, freaking Keanu Reeves. He's terrible. So yeah, shots fired.
It sucks so bad because I want to go see them, and you like live like 22 minutes away, and you're like, eh.
No, I'm not going to go see that.
It would cost me $3,000.
And you know me, I try to go to every freaking show I can get to. I know. I'm just not.
But I would just go dressed like as Bill and Ted. You know, maybe we if we. What about if we go dressed as Bill and Ted?
I don't have any Ted cosplay. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm automatically a Bill. That makes sense.
So I'm not. I don't have any Bill cosplay either. You just have the blonde hair.
I could do it. I was him at Comic-Con. You remember when I went through the Quantum Leap experience?
You saw who? Alex Winters.
I was Bill S. Preston Esquire.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah, it was cool. It was good. It was a good costume. Everybody got it right away.
I'm glad.
So the baby died. The baby died. I'm sad because when I heard, okay, there's only one thing to do, I thought they were just going to cut the baby out of her.
No.
Because she was dead. But they said it was like, 7 or 8 months? So it's viable, probably.
I don't even recall.
It depends
how
where
much
the rocks fell, I guess.
Right, exactly. I mean, the baby died of trauma more than likely. So.
And what were they going to name that baby?
They Joaquin were going too. To name it, they were going to name it Joaquin. Joaquin That's, instead of Joaquin.
So similar, it's confusing.
Right. I've Why listened to seven that? Episodes. I can't decide how to say these people's names. So
Joaquin Phoenix.
And Joaquin.
Joaquin, one
Coming to America.
Coming to America.
Yeah.
McDowell's, not McDonald's.
Right, exactly. We have the Golden Orcs.
Sherry Headley. She called me Albie once.
We have the Big Mick.
which I
Sherry Headley,
right,
yes. She was on the Quantum Leap podcast because she was in Pool
Gorgeous,
Hall Blues.
Beautiful person. Yep.
Was that her in Pool Hall Blues?
Pool Hall Blues, yeah. She's the sexy chick in Pool Hall Blues.
Right. You've been eating onions.
You've been eating onions again?
I keep on, because I'm thinking of A Song for the Soul, which rips my heart out every time I watch it. But that wasn't Sherry Headley. That was A Song for the Soul.
Ah, yes.
When they're like, and that had Eric LaSalle from Coming to America.
Yeah.
Full circle. Yeah. There we go. So.
Okay. So the rock slide, not a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it was the obvious plot twist that I knew was going to happen in that moment.
So structural engineers and surveyors are probably more important in this world than they give them credit for.
Yeah, I'm just thinking it's just like your augments, you're supposed to be really smart, but these people are doing a lot of dumb things.
In Star Trek 2, a lot of them seem very dumb. They really did.
Well, then, okay, so maybe we'll get into this because this is what Khan keeps saying to justify some of his more stupid decisions. And I think he even says it to Zaldamo that when they are created, they were created for a battle, and the people who were controlling them wouldn't let them come to their full potential. They just wanted to control them for their petty ends. I thought that the augments took over and there was no controlling them, yet Khan is still talking as if there was some cabal that had fetters on all of these genetically engineered warlords and supermen that had taken over the planet. So to me, that again does not track with what we heard in Space Seed. In Space Seed, they made it seem like they were tyrants that ruled the world, absolutely, maybe 6 or 7 of them that had vast legions of armies.
It would have been down to one man eventually.
So right. Who is this mysterious other that is actually using Khan towards a greater end that is not Khan's? That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Wasn't it Brent Spiner?
Maybe in the
Enterprise
regeneration
and in Picard, right?
In the regeneration Borgified timeline that we saw introduced in Enterprise. I just finished season 2 of Enterprise this
week.
Starting season 3, they're heading into the Expanse. So, I just saw Regeneration. And I used to poo-poo my friend Sean Ray for saying that that the reason that everything seems different in the prequels now is because the Borg technology skewed the timeline into this tangent where they have all this Borg technology now that wasn't there in the original series, and the technology has gotten better because of reverse engineering the Borg findings. Okay, I'll buy it. Why not?
Well,
Cold Wars, Borgs. So
Borgs, oh my. We'll talk about that and more thoughts on Star Trek Con. And I think we got some trivia and a couple other things.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to take a short break for those watching live. Be about 5 minutes. For those watching the replay, it'll only be a few commercials. So we'll be right back right after this. And we're back!
And we're back.
Welcome back to Trexploration. I'm Albie.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about Star Trek Con, episodes 5 and 6.
Con!
What are the episodes called? I'm going back up, and it is Imagination's Limits and the Good of All.
Ooh,
like
yes.
One for all. One of
five
all.
And six combined, baby. Not 6-7. 5-6.
6-7.
So
I don't get it. 6-7.
Where did we leave off? I got completely sidetracked.
We're talking about shows we finished. You just finished season 2 of Enterprise, was it?
Yep.
Three.
Yep. Oh, and the time two. And timeline, and then and the accelerated technologies.
And I was going to mention Serenity and I just finished Young Sheldon.
Oh.
I was not prepared for that ending. I knew it was coming, but I thought it was going to be when Jim Parsons is playing old Sheldon. I thought he was just going to mention it kind of like at the end of Stand By Me, you know, and then he died.
Yeah,
so, Laura. I wasn't expecting
stop watching Young Sheldon because at that point she was losing her dad too, and they went into so much depth in that series. Spoiler, but we know it from Big Bang Theory that
Big Bang. He says it often.
Yeah,
so
he says it often.
Spoiler:
so.
Yes and no.
So I mean, the show goes up to the point where he loses his dad, and oh my god, they rip your freaking heart out,
dude! I cried, I bawled. Not only because I lost my dad, but because I'm the dad now and I'm the next one to go, you know?
So,
I'm like, damn. And you know, the guy who played George looked a lot like my dad. And my dad owned every shirt that George Sr. wore, except for maybe two of them.
Wow.
Like the same color jeans and those shirts and that haircut, you know? But my dad didn't have the Southern accent. So after cried a bunch, you know, I appreciated it. It was great, and it happens and stuff. We started watching. We went down like a YouTube bonus feature, special feature things with interviews and stuff. And the guy who plays George Sr., not Georgie, he has like a Norwegian, Californian accent. And I was like, my mind was blown. I was like, this makes absolutely no sense.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
He's like the opposite of George Sr. Like,
well, you know,
and it makes no sense.
Well, it's funny when you hear the guy who plays Vigilante on Peacemaker talking. He's got like an Aussie or Kiwi accent, I think it sounds like. Yeah. So
John Cena didn't know for the first season.
Oh, really?
So when they were doing press, John Cena was like, what? Because he stayed in accent the whole time, you know? He
stayed in character, I guess. It makes it easier. So. Yeah. Oh, that's pretty funny.
But, oh, if you hear the actor who played George, what was his name?
I'm not really sure.
Lance something.
Lance Armstrong.
Anyway, Lance Hendrick.
Yeah.
Lance something. But,
Lance A. Lot.
It's just, it's just crazy. It makes you realize that he was not just a good actor acting. He was like a very good actor because even the mannerisms, everything was different. I was like, holy crap, my actor dar didn't go off or anything. It's crazy.
There is a Star Trek tie-in to Wrath of Khan because Sheldon, to process it, is thinking about Spock's death scene in Wrath of Khan.
Oh my goodness, yes.
So it's, it's something else, man. So
yeah, it's worth the watch. I highly recommend the show.
It's
We're on to George and Mandy's first wedding now.
First marriage.
First marriage, we're halfway through season one, and season two just premiered, but we're going to catch up before we watch that one.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Laura wanted to watch the premiere of season two tonight, and I told her I was going to be on mic, but please watch it because it's on Paramount now. And she knows she wants to wait for me because I don't know why. I don't know.
That's
why.
Love.
That and ghosts. That's love. She likes ghosts even more than she likes Georgie and Mandy. And she
didn't
watch
either. Also, right?
Yep. Yep. So
cool.
So we got all new stuff to look forward to. But yeah, highly recommend Young Sheldon. I love Big Bang Theory. I don't apologize for it. Young Sheldon is a far superior series in just about every measure. Every measure.
Yeah, I heard people trashing Big Bang Theory. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
That's a whole different podcast.
Yeah, but still, it's a great universe to be part of, and I can't wait for the new Sliders version of Young Sheldon coming soon, right?
Then we'll see. I don't know when it's coming, like, at some point.
But I'm loving George and Mandy because the guy who plays Georgie's stepdad, Mandy's dad,
Will Sasso. Will Sasso from
Mad
TV.
He does the world's best Jesse the Body Ventura impression ever. Hands down, no one is better than him. If you haven't heard it, go on YouTube, type in Will Sasso, Jesse Ventura.
It's
amazing. He does a better Jesse Ventura than Jesse Ventura.
Thank you. I was going to go there, but you beat me to it. So I haven't seen it. I probably saw him do it on Mad TV a million times.
Maybe. Yeah. He did more Stone Cold and a couple other things, which he ended up actually wrestling, I think, Bret the Hitman Hart back in the WCW days. So check that out when you're down that rabbit hole.
On the On Wrestling podcast with Albie Burge. Yeah. Tell us more, Albie.
I'm disillusioned with the new stuff because of political reasons and disappointment all around. But it's hard to get it out of my childhood, you know?
This is the P.O. Box key, everybody. P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York. Send Albie your autographed figurines of Bret the Hitman Hart.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
I had that LJN, the rubber. You remember the rubber wrestling figures from the Kmart back in the early 80s?
No. Were they like the stretch Armstrongs where you stretch the arms?
No, they're just hard rubber.
I had a Hulk one like that too.
Yeah. Stretch Armstrong. I broke a Stretch Armstrong. Red gel inside.
Ugh. Poison, right? Poison gel.
That's what they said, but it was just food coloring and sugar.
All right.
You know, the corn syrup stuff.
I guess you knew because you ate it. And you're still here.
When you're a fat kid, you eat your Stretch Armstrong sometimes, you know.
I was a fat kid. I wasn't strong enough to rip it open, though. That was the problem.
You were never a fat kid.
Oh, you should see pictures, my friend.
Okay, we'll send pictures. Yeah. No, actually, when I was a kid, I was svelte. I was a model.
I was going to say, I was a fatty fat until I hit puberty.
I was a kid in Sears catalogs and James Way ads and Kmart ads.
They had to keep a string on my ankle because I was going to fly away.
That's funny. So, you know, we somewhere in the middle we passed. So we were both in a middle somewhere. So you got buff and I got.
I'm working on getting hefty again. I'm eating too much. Yeah. I'm drinking too much. Life is too good. I need some adversity. I need to be on SETI Alpha 5.
This is SETI Alpha 5.
After the explosion.
What did we talk about in this episode yet?
Well, we were talking about the. Okay, so. So, we have now Ivan murdering wantonly. Khan saying,
why? He's just an asshole.
Because
right?
He's exactly just this. Okay. Another thing that takes me out of it. It's like, again, Ivan has been a cartoon's cartoon since the beginning of the thing. So, any scene that has him in it is just annoying because there's just no nuance, there's no depth, there's no nothing but belligerence.
One-dimensional.
For belligerence sake, right? Exactly. And it just, that's tedious. And then you have, like, Khan still trying to defend his action, saying, I'll judge him. And Zalmondo's like, no, we'll judge him or there's no way forward for us because I can't let this stand. So at some point, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop with the aliens, like I was saying before. But I don't know that they have ulterior motives. I don't, if they do, I can't fathom them yet because if they were going to attack, though, this was a perfect excuse to say, screw you. We're done with this charade and bring Khan to his knees. Instead, he's saying, hey, here's a ship so that you can leave.
On a planet without refrigeration, you want to keep your Morlocks alive or your Eloi alive.
Do you think that's what it is, huh?
Well, the thought that I had because of that is that they ate the fish bones and all. Because the calcium's good for you.
Alrighty. So...
so that gave me like a creepy vibe. You know? The seafood did originally. Because I would have died on this planet. I just can't stomach seafood at all.
I mean, if you were starving, I think you'd find a way.
Maybe. People say that, but I'd be eating like tree bark. I don't know.
You'd be eating the yellow berries.
A lot of yellow berries.
Right.
I'd be pounding them into a paste and making a pizza.
Right. Why don't they try to cook the eels? The eels are probably good protein.
Ah.
Smoked eel.
I don't know. My sniffer is very sensitive when it comes to that.
That
seafood taste smell.
Well, do you think the seti eels taste like seafood or like, what do you think? Chicken? I
would think like crocodile, like alligator.
Crocodile's good. Crocodile tastes like,
again, the scent.
It tastes like chicken mixed with mozzarella sticks in my
but it's got that
experience.
Smell to it.
Well, I'm sorry, Albie. I'm sorry that you would have retroactively starved yourself on SETI Alpha 5.
This is SETI Alpha 5? No, but that, if there was going to be another shooter drop, I think that would be it. But it's possible that they're just like cool, kind aliens, you know? It's
yeah, possible. you want to believe that. You want to believe that because of Star Trek. Because Star
right.
Trek.
Because
but
Star Trek.
You also don't want that because you still want some kind of conflict and drama in an audio drama. And so I admit that I'm a bit conflicted when it comes to that, because I do actually take them at their word. I don't think that they are anything more than what they're showing us. But at the same time, the writer in me, the storyteller in me, says the shoe is going to drop somewhere somehow. So I don't know. I could be wrong. I hope in equal parts that I'm both wrong and right, which is weird.
It's possible.
I don't know what I want from that storyline, because either way they go, I'm going to be a little bit disappointed. So that's a Chris problem, maybe? Finally, we found a problem that's not part of this show. It's a me thing.
The feeling of Star Trek Con for me right now is equal parts chore and fear of disappointment. I think it's because the con stories that we connected the dots with in our heads all these years might just be better in our heads than actually having it out in the universe.
I think that that's a fair assessment. I think that you can say that about anything, though. I think it's just a matter of how well you write it. And I think that this is falling down because, I guess this gets back to one of the other main points I have. They don't know what story they're telling half the time, it seems to me. It seems like there is just a lot of filler conversations here, although they're using them to pin like the episode titles on the limits of imagination. When Marla is talking to Khan about you should trust the aliens, she gives this entire long speech about Zefren Cochrane and creating the warp thing and everything we saw in First Contact, again rehashing stuff that we already know from Star Trek, and saying that the Vulcans came, they saw us, and it led to this and it led to that, and like, again, from maybe two or three lines
doesn't know this.
Dialogue I understand,
so,
but she's rehashing this like they were rehashing the eel facts that we saw in Star Trek 2. Mm-hmm. And I think it's meant to be an homage and meant to make you feel that Star Trek feel and like swell up with the pride of humanity's achievements and those first steps in trusting people to get out to the stars. I guess she didn't know that Archer wanted to knock the Vulcan science delegation on its ass. But...
And Khan's probably not a fan of the Federation, you know, because the Earth kicked him out. They said, you guys can't... You don't have to go home, but you can't stay at this planet.
But again, it's like we have these conversations where what Marla is saying is a fait accompli. Like we all know we're going to agree with her, and it's just maybe to set up Khan as again a little bit of a straw. It's like a straw argument. It's just so that he has something to push against, so that you can see their diametrically opposed opinion on how to proceed on this. Yet somehow, you know, they're still gaga in love with one another. I think it worked better when she was trying to get him to bring his people together and see how to bring like more cohesion to the group. Now they have this other, and he's just in warlord mode. Although he was never really a warlord, he wanted to make the world better, but there were people controlling him again, which doesn't make any freaking sense at all. So
we need more information.
Right. Who was controlling? Who was behind all of this stuff? Project Khan, Brent Spiner again. I guess Christina Chong.
Wouldn't that be cool if they pulled him out at the last moment? I'd pop for that.
At first, you know, the funny thing is when they premiered the voice work for the character Zaldamo. I keep saying Zaldamo, but it's Del Mondo.
Tony Amendola.
For people down in the chat, tell me where Zaldamo's from. If you tell me what Zaldamo's from, I'll send you something.
There you go.
Yeah. So, but I think that I just distracted myself. Well, I had a point.
Oh, Zoe Saldana.
I thought that Del Mondo might have been Brent because he has sort of like a Brentish kind of timbre to his voice.
I could see that.
I thought it was processed Brent, but I think that they would have announced that Brent was part of the series.
Yeah, that would have got more eyes or ears on the program.
So, I mean, did you find any of the dialogue outside of the action to be compelling in any way? Because you have Zon Khan talking to Del Mondo. You have Khan talking to Marla. You have Marla talking about Zefram Cochrane. You have freaking Sulu talking to Lear about the nature of evil. It's all of this sort of broader philosophical debate.
To me, the contiguous thing in these two episodes is filler. I mean, you said it, but it's true. They're doing the two episodes before the final three episodes. That's what it felt like.
Because seven,
like,
eight, nine.
We got this and we got this. Now we need a little bit of this to get from here to there.
You know, that sums it up so succinctly and so perfectly. I feel like I'm not jokingly. I really think that I'm going on and on because I'm trying to figure out a way to get to generate more discussion out of this.
Yeah.
But there's just nothing there.
Parts that stuck out when MacGyver said, I am Khan's woman. I am carrying Khan's child. You know, I was like, okay.
Yeah. Did you think that anything was going to change Ivan's mind?
I don't know. Is she like a Yoko maybe?
She's the Yoko, right? That's why they hated her to begin with.
Yeah.
So, and why didn't Khan like just murder Ursula where she stood for screaming at him about what a failure he is?
And taking the Little Mermaid's voice.
Right.
So the moral of the story is, you know, get a survey done before you go breaking down cave walls.
That's true. Yep.
Or everybody leave and have some engineers look at it before they do it and maybe brace it. I don't know.
Yeah. And,
but me, I don't know. And the ocean, the sea, the underground sea, how is that going to come into play? What is that? Well, they have water and it's fresh water. So that's something. You need water to live.
Yeah, they are still going to live for another 15 years. No matter what's going on, they're still going to live for another 15 years. Whether or not, maybe the Zaldamoans are going to exile them to the surface because they're just jerks.
Ah.
I don't know. Maybe because they refused to prosecute Ivan. Let's speculate. Where's it going? Where's the story going?
They're having like a little trial amongst themselves, right?
They're going to have the bell and everything.
Mondo ding, ding, and Khan.
Ding, ding, judging. Ding, ding.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So it's like that whole thing again. So maybe, what's this guy's name? The big guy made out of metal?
Ivan. Da.
So maybe they sentence Ivan to go to SETI Alpha 7. And start his own civilization.
I think it would be better for him if he went to SETI Alpha 4. Probably more in the habitable zone.
Yeah, wouldn't need as many jackets.
Right? they don't have many snow shovels to go around, so they can't send them all.
I don't shovel snow. Sorry, I don't do that. So.
I finally got my driveway redone for the first time ever since we moved in 20 years ago. And it's a pleasure shoveling snow now. I don't hit dips and cracks. And I used to shovel snow and it would like hit me in the stomach because...
I would assume you would have got the heated ethylene glycol or something.
Is that a thing?
The driveway.
That's it. I'm going to have to call the guys and have them do it again.
They do that.
The heated ethylene glycol, you called it?
Yeah, you know, like they have underground tube heating in houses sometimes. You saw it on this old house. They do that for sidewalks and driveways now. Oh. So you just, an hour before you're going to go out, you just turn on or you have it timed.
I didn't know this.
It just melts all your snow off your driveway and sidewalk.
But it probably melts your tires too.
No. It's not that hot.
I don't know.
It just seems... has to be above melting point of water.
I think like the, I think that this is technology indistinguishable from magic. I think you're pulling my leg, sir.
No, something to look into though. You just run hot tubing underneath.
See, this is what Khan wanted for the people of Earth. There would have been ethyl glycolene tubing under everybody's driveway and a chicken in every pot.
There would have been one leader eventually at first telling people not to shovel their driveways.
What else do people want? They just want to relax and have a snow day and not have to
shovel. I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. It's the only exercise I get. The only thing is when you get
exercise.
Ripped. When you get the plow leavings at the end of the driveway, it's all like ice and it's 4 feet high and it weighs 75 pounds per shovelful. And that's when you, that's when you call Laura and you say, can you bring out a glass of water, hun?
See, I work at home, so I'd think I'd just be snowed in for the winter.
No, unfortunately, we do have to get out of the driveway even when it snows. It's funny. I have employees now that tell me, it's snowing out. Is the office closed? I'm like, it's New York in winter. We get weather. Wake up a half hour early, shovel yourself out, and go to work. That's how we do it here. Anyway.
Just get a subscription service to Salt.
You know?
Right. Anyway. Yeah, there's not a lot more left about these episodes. Is there anything we're forgetting? I didn't take notes because I was dreading the whole thing.
No salt for Penny's pads. No salt for Penny's pads.
Oh, yeah. That would burn her little tiny skin. Yeah, you got to get her boots.
Yep, I did. She hates them.
Okay.
She hates them, but we put them on. We put them on, especially when we go to Vermont.
Sometimes.
They got a lot of marble sidewalks in the place that we go into in Vermont because it's the marble state. So they quarry and just make the sidewalks out of it.
Yeah,
but they
sense.
Throw this salt down on the sidewalks in the winter and it burns your feet. So we got her these little booties there. I sent you the picture of her on the ice with her little booties.
I think so. Yeah, yes. I think so.
So anyway.
Yes.
So you have that to look forward to. We'll do that on an extra show. Maybe listen, Linda, we'll do a picture of Penelope with booties on.
With winter booties on.
Winter booties, yeah.
We might have to start making trading cards. Just saying. Send more art to be on the trading cards, everybody.
We have to do our own expansion of like a Magic Ruffalo the Gathering Taco. Kind of thing, right?
Yes. The coins are coming too. I think they might be 3D printed.
Challenge coins? Sure. Challenge coins with our with our cartoon likenesses on them.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. We'll put on Scott's artwork, planetricecreative.com, on one side and Linda's portrait on the other side. That would be perfect.
Yes.
So
the coin is not with me. It's a prototype. Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm done talking about this. Unless do you want to do?
Is there anybody left in the chat? I had an idea.
I don't know.
Left in the chat.
I think everybody left us because of that 10 minute
if we
break.
Have more than one person
reading my fiction. I don't know if anybody's in the chat. Susie Q didn't make it this night. This night of all nights.
I think it was her birthday week, so she's having fun. Oh, they just recorded. I really recommend Totally Killer. Dave and Stacey just did Totally Killer on the TV Deep Dive Corman Productions podcast DVD Al's Place. So go there. Yeah, and they talk table talk, and they talk about Totally Killer. I think they just recorded their next film, which I'm going to watch tonight. So I'm excited about that. The Totally Killer review is good. Have you seen Totally Killer?
I don't know what Totally Killer
Prime.
Is.
Back to the Future, but a chick, and they go back to 1987, but it's also a slasher murder mystery.
Okay, I got to give it a shot.
So it's like Back to the Future mixed with It's a Wonderful Knife, kind of. But it's a really good, really good thing.
I hear you.
So I got a track and tell.
Oh, let me see.
One of many laser discs.
Of Space Seed.
Are you guys interested in us doing Space Seed eventually? Sooner rather than later.
We
got to
do
Space
Seed
stuff.
100% Space Seed, yeah. Tell us below. But I think that it would be good maybe to wrap up this chat when this finally is over.
What are the thoughts? What are the thoughts on moving forward with Con? I think we should just do it. It's only three.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, we could maybe do them live like this. It makes it easier. Like maybe Monday Night Live, we can do them if we're both available.
Yeah, figure it out.
But we'll figure it out. I you know what? Yeah,
turn on those notifications so you get notified when we go live.
100%. And we're happy that some people were able to join us tonight to talk about this. It's nice to get a differing point of view from somebody who thinks that Rosalind Lear is the interesting part of this. which is just, it blows my mind. But, as you know, it takes all kinds, right? That's why.
Well, we're a crew, and if we all had the same opinion, that'd be boring.
Right? We'd all be like Khan. We'd all be like Ivan.
Yeah. So, Ivan, I must break you.
Who was your episode crush?
Still McGivers. I mean, who else is there, really? Tuvok, maybe a little bit.
All right.
What about you?
Episode crush would be the Zeldamian that got crushed under Ivan's boot. And my favorite part of the episode was probably the... Either the explosion of Seti Alpha 6, finally.
Okay.
Or maybe the fact that they're building Superman's pod to get off the planet. How about you?
That was interesting. How did McGivers describe it? It looked like a forensic investigation of a plane crash.
Yes, yes.
That was good descriptive use of description, because I instantly pictured what was going on with her.
Yep, you saw like the hangar with everything laid out. Yeah.
So I appreciated that from the writers.
Okay.
My favorite part was probably the scariest part, which is the underground sea. Yeah, I went for me listening to an audio drama to kind of place myself there.
Underground sea.
And it evoked the memories of the original Journey to the Center of the Earth film. I think it's the original. 1951,
with Rod Steiger. With Rod Steiger.
Oh, I should have looked it up. Pat Boone. It was Pat Boone.
With Pat Boone and Debbie Reynolds and special guest star F. Murray Abraham.
Exactly. Debbie Reynolds. She did a great song and dance number with those large mushrooms underground.
With something else.
It's one of those things that one of my favorite subgenres of movies is classic sci-fi that got everything totally wrong. And I just enjoy it. You know, the whole space air thing. Space air! You know? I love those things. And Journey to the Center of Earth is probably one of my favorites when it comes to those.
I'm trying to, I don't think I've seen that for years. I read it.
Oh, yeah, it's a great book. All of his books.
I love Jules Verne. For Jules Verne, it's always about the journey, not the destination.
Yeah,
Jules and Verne.
What was your favorite part? Did you say your favorite
part? I told you I said my favorite part. It's one of two. It's Superman's pod and or the explosion.
So do we go to just final thoughts and ratings? Or
do you want me to give you any trivia? Questions? Do we get any trivia?
Yeah. Whose turn is it to who?
I'll give it to you. I don't know if you have your glasses. I don't know if you have your cards ready.
Yeah, it might be a struggle.
Mine are right here. Oh, Jesus Christ. let's see if you know this one. Again, the cards know all, man. In the movie, The Wrath of Khan, where do the Enterprise and the Reliant engage in their final battle?
Some kind of nebula?
You know what it's called.
The Mutara Nebula?
Yes, the Mutara Nebula. Ding, ding, ding. I have you put three questions. That's one.
Three questions.
All right.
I got one out of three so far. Write your answers down below. Let us know.
In what is maybe one of my favorite scenes in all of Star Trek, bar none, what does Captain Edward Jellicoe order Counselor Troy to do after he assumes command of the USS Enterprise-D in the Next Generation episode, Chain of Command, Part 1?
Put on a damn uniform.
Thank you. God damn it. Get out of those pajamas that you wear on the bridge.
Were you angry at that cleavage?
You touchy-feely. I just love Jellicoe. I think Jellicoe is like one of the best characters ever introduced in Star Trek. I love him.
Growing up means understanding Jellicoe was right.
Yes. He was right about everything.
I will never grow up. I will never grow up.
Oh, Ronnie Cox.
He wants to give us shorter shifts?
We barely knew you. The original series episode Assignment Earth was originally intended by Gene Roddenberry as an opportunity for what?
A backdoor pilot to a new series.
Yes, all right. You got
American Virgin and Doctor Who.
You got three.
With Terry Garr. I would have watched that.
Roberta Lincoln herself.
I didn't like the Doctor Who guy, but I like Terry Garr. Man.
You know what? When I was watching Discovery Season 2 with the Red Angel, I thought that Roberta Lincoln might be the Red Angel.
Oh, maybe.
No, it turned out to be. Oh, it was Burnham. Oh, there's a shock. There's a surprise. All
Terry
right.
Garr. Makes me want to go back and watch Tootsie, is it? Was that Terry Garr or was that somebody else?
Mr. Mom.
Mr. Mom. Remember when it was silly if dads were parents?
Yeah, right? They had a whole...
I'm proud to be a parent.
That whole movie based on the fact that a dad could be a dad.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Times are different. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll go to final thoughts and ratings.
Yeah, let's do some final thoughts and ratings on Con 5 and 6. Sorry we didn't go in 2 hours, but it's always fun doing live stuff. Do you want to go first?
Yes, I enjoy going first because I like to end on a good note, and you're very eloquent. Very much disappointed at this point in the audio drama. I'm wishing I had binged the whole thing so the down points in the middle wouldn't have been this long, because at this point it's like 2 weeks of dread-ish, maybe three. Whereas if I listened to a whole book, I wouldn't have really noticed if I got bored, because I'm just listening for more information, trying to figure out the mystery or something. So maybe on a re-listen eventually, you know, I'll enjoy it more. But right now it's dread mixed with disappointment. But the completist in me wants to finish it. I do like McGiver's, what's her name? Ren Schmidt, mm-hmm. right? She's the high point of this. And of course, Khan, Naveen Andrews. They're great at what they do. And of course, I'm a Voyager mark. So Tuvok, Sulu is a little, maybe I've had too much Sulu in my life right now, but I'm hoping that some of the silly things we made up that might happen, or something that totally surprises us and changes everything we know. But as for right now, I'm going to give these episodes, I'm not going to judge them separately, because, well, if I did, they'd have the same number. I'm going to give them both a 2.
Mm.
I'm going to give 2 rainbow tail fish out of 5.
Bones and all. Bones and
all. Yeah, bones and all. It's a good source of calcium. What about you, my friend?
Well, I still hold out hope that they're going to pull it out for the end, mainly because I just love the idea of the audio drama, and I love the idea that Nick Meyer is behind this. And I still think that they could turn it around, but as of right now, it just seems to be an exercise in futility. And you're going to stick to the end because it's Khan and it's Star Trek and we're completists. So if this were any other show, it's funny, because when I stopped watching like superhero shows on the CW, the WB, I said, if this was anything besides like The Flash, would you be watching it? And the answer was a resounding no. And I feel like if this was just somebody's audiobook of people stranded on a planet, would I still be listening to it? Probably not. But am I going to finish it? Of course, it's Star Trek. I want to finish it. I want to know. So I want to hold out hope that it'll turn around. I'm not.
And it might be great.
Yeah. And yeah, like you said, Ren Schmidt's really good. Naveen Andrews is really good. So I think the guy that plays Zaldamo is pretty good. There is equal amounts of great voice acting to counterbalance the terrible voice acting. But is that enough? I don't know. And it remains to be seen. If the story turns around, now that we have these new complications, these new aliens, and it kind of changes the landscape, I'll at least want to see how they dovetail that into what we've seen in Wrath of Khan. So that being said, I still, like you, can't give this duo of episodes very... I'm also going to give it 2 entirely preventable cave-ins out of 5. So
I like it.
We want to know out there what you think of Cons Part 5 and 6. You can do so right here on the YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/ATOR Exploration. You can make comments below. LaForge stayed below. You can also like, subscribe, and share.
Matt Frewer. I get that reference.
There we go. Uh-huh. New Jersey. Yep. Also, follow us and support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/trexploration. There you'll find all the levels of membership. Please consider supporting the show financially. You can also do it through PayPal, Zelle, Venmo, and Cash App. We'll have QR
and
codes.
And shoebox full of money.
And shoebox full of money. Please tell us what you think through our trexploration.bluesky.social account. You can follow us there. You can also send us emails. It's trexplorationpod@gmail.com. You can send us anything you'd like to the P.O. Box. That's P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. And as always, we want to thank all of you who support the show, all of you for subscribing, liking, sharing. We do it because we love you and we couldn't do it without you. And just remember, anything that you send us, any comments might be used on future episode of Trexploration. And speaking of future episodes, Albie, tell us what's coming next.
What is the next episode? The next episode of Con is Con 7. I am Maria!
It's Marla.
Marla. I'm going to do that again. I am Marla!
Marla!
Is this when she takes over for Con?
I guess so. I don't know. I guess she puts her foot down. She draws a line in the sand. She draws a line in the rubble. I don't know.
Maybe becomes the leader.
Maybe.
That'd be cool.
So, yeah, it seems to me that this is going to be Marla's time to shine. She's going to give her mighty yawp.
Before we go, do you have any crazy tinfoil hat theories about what might happen in these final three episodes?
I think that first, Marla is going to divorce Khan and marry Zaldamo. Okay. And then he's going to make her baby into like a star baby. And it's either going to be like Ziggy Stardust or the star baby at the end of 2001.
Okay.
So, and then he's just going to, the star child is going to float off the planet through the power of rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Into a monolith, into the future. What do you think?
Into the future. My earlier thing about it's a cookbook. I think we're going to get, there's another shoe. I don't know if these lavender pearlescent beings have shoes. I would assume.
Okay.
But I think the other shoe is going to be they need them for some purpose.
All right. So maybe they'll be batteries like the Matrix.
Yes, exactly. And we've already established that we both think that the Lear is Khan and MacGyver's child, right?
I think it's becoming more and more likely, but the fact that she wouldn't have revealed that she's revealing that Zaldamo's giving her the information, is that another red herring? I don't know. We've talked about this too much, but I think maybe
I'm interested.
If they don't reveal it in the next episode, I don't care. I officially don't care anymore.
That'll be a great episode podcast. I don't care. We'll see you next time. I'm going to listen. I'm going to go in there tonight and listen to the next episode. After the movie.
I will be listening tomorrow, and we'll talk about it Monday night.
Yeah. As if everything goes right, we'll see you Monday night. We'll see.
You rhymed.
So for Trexploration, I'm Albie.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll see you next time.
And keep on conning on.